morning, everyone. Welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on February 19, 2009. It's now about 6:31 a.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome. Excuse me. We invite you to call this morning. We have five open lines. We have already a call. Hold on, please. Good morning. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Your first name and where you're calling from, please. Hello? Oop. Let's see. We can get them on.
Can you hear me?
Here you go. Okay. Good morning. Thank you for calling it. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Your first name and where you're calling from, please.
My name's Tony. I'm calling from Ohio.
Tony from Ohio. How are things in Ohio this morning?
Weather's nice. How's it there?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. I think I can take my motorcycle out for a ride today. It'll probably be in the 50s. Just perfect. What could we do for you today? Tony, have any comments or questions?
Well, I saw the topic of your show was taxation without representation.
Yeah.
And I was calling in to comment about that.
Oh, please do. It's an open mic. Go ahead.
Well, basically, I agree with what you're getting at with the topic of the show, that I believe what we're doing with all these bailouts and the way that the government is interfering with our markets is essentially socializing their losses at the top of our society with the debts of the working class. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So basically, what we're doing is creating a situation which we've been creating for a long, long time, many, many generations of government, to where we have a national debt that is incurring for future generations, people that aren't even born yet. So the more we bail out, the more we are saying to the next generation that you're going to pay for what we're doing now. And that is, in essence, I think, the worst kinds of taxation without representation.
You took the words out of my mouth, Tony. You could have done this program for me this morning. Absolutely, and that was the whole point of it. Is that we became revolutionaries. We became patriots and revolutionaries because of the taxation, and it was minimal taxation by England, but we had no representation. And in fact, it was pennies a year. It was no big deal, believe it or not, and we could have paid it and still received the protection of England and all this other good stuff, and yet we touted the words taxation without representation, and we went to war. And here we have a exponentially larger situation, you know, in dollar amount, and yet we're accepting it as something that will save our country, and yet we're indebting people who have absolutely no say in it. I mean, isn't that about the worst treachery that you could think of?
Absolutely, and to me, there's simple solutions to what happened, and none of it includes bailing people out with the middle class and the lower classes' children's tax money, you know, later on. And if that debt didn't occur because of this generation, they might have lower taxes and higher prosperity because of it. The solutions to the problems, to me, were common sense. They kept saying these companies were too big to fail. Well, then it occurs to me that something was not enforced, say monopolization laws that were already on the books, or laws concerning antitrust. We went through this in our country's history before, but there must have been no enforcement, as we saw with the SEC, that was completely incapable. Why don't we just put an amendment on the Constitution that says no more federal deficit spending until we pay this debt off? God, I know it'll take us 100 years, but let's do that, and let's create a surplus. and then we can start cutting taxes. When we finally get a surplus generations from now, and the reason for the surplus, you might ask, instead of cutting taxes when we're just dead even, I would say because in case we have an emergency war, say this Iraq thing, say it was legitimate, I'm not saying it was, but let's say it was, then okay, we must incur emergency war costs. But then this generation must pay for its own war, and therefore our taxes must go up to replace the surplus as it is being depleted. And that way each generation would pay for its own war and would only go to war with the most strenuous of scrutiny, because our taxes would be raised every time we went to war.
Right. Well, see, what you are referring to, Tony, is consequence. And we don't suffer consequence in the United States. What we do is we defer the consequence of someone else. This is George Orwell exemplified. Too big to fail. Now, how do you define that? It's impossible to define, but becomes a mantra. We repeat this over and over again. Then if you ask the person on the street who's incredibly ignorant of what's going on, we want to make sure that they only watch Dancing with the Stars and nothing more complicated than that. And you say, why are we doing this? Well, you're too big to fail, right? And they just repeat it. I mean, it's like mind control. I have friends right. that are absolutely, I'm telling you, brilliant guys, literally brilliant guys. I don't hold a candle to these guys when it comes to the stuff that they do and most other things. And yet, when it comes to economics and politics, they sound like the guy on the street. It drives me nuts. I don't know how they make that, how they bridge that chasm, how they become so brilliant and so stupid at the same time. For some reason, they too have become brainwashed, like, well, you know, if industry would only have done that, and they wouldn't have done this, and they would have been so greedy, and they would have been here, and government would have the right regulations, we wouldn't have this problem. And I look at them, I go, you've defined absolutely nothing. You have no idea where your marks are. And I said, it's just words. And I said, it sounds good. Like, if Tony, be a good boy, and guess what? You'll be a good boy. I mean, what does that prove? And what does it mean? We have no idea. You know? And I'm finding this frustrating. Yeah. Let me ask you, I have you on the air, where do you think this is going to lead us? Just give me, I mean, don't be afraid. Whatever you think it is, it's okay with me.
Well, I mean, I figure they'll eventually figure out through inflation that they're destroying the dollar and they'll stop. It's just a matter of where they stop. I can't see them completely destroying the dollar. I mean, I've heard forecasts of that from some people that know better than I, but I just think at some point it would be political suicide, and that's really what this is all about for them, is political expediency. They want to get reelected, and to do nothing to them seemed less politically expedient for re-election. Their donors are the people that, you know, want these bailouts. And that too big to fail thing, if we can go back to that for a second, it is relating, because the only companies that are too big to fail are the ones the government subsidized through their interference.
That's correct.
And that's the way I see a company that's too big to fail. There's no such thing unless we create it. The government interferes in every facet of our life. From marriage, you had a show the other day about religion, and basically, you know, when you talk about the sanctity of marriage, what destroyed marriage? Government interference did. They gave us economic incentives to get married, and then wondered why divorce rates went through the roof.
You know, it's so interesting to hear. It's refreshing to hear you speak that way, because I don't have many conversations like this. On CNBC last night, I was watching a debate. And one of the old timers, I don't know the guy's name, he has white hair, and I just don't know his name because he's only on late at night, and I don't watch it very often. They were debating the problem. This one guy was saying, hey, you know, can't you see what the real problem is? And he interrupted the fellow who's saying this and said, well, we've tried the free market, it went haywire, and it didn't work, and now we have to do something else. And I just wanted to throw a shoe right through the TV screen. I said, now here's a guy who's getting paid exponentially more money than I have ever made in my life, and, you know, is on a financial network, and is actually repeating the mantra that we have a free capitalist system that didn't work. And I just couldn't believe it. And of course, people who are watching it are saying, well, I guess he's right. Blah, you know, and that's the end of that. It about drove me nuts. And the problem is you can't fight that, because even on the financial channels, you think that would give a little bit more straightforward advice and information, because they're basically financial economic channel. They're giving away, they're repeating the same government mantra, and I just don't understand that.
Well, government interference, it goes back as far as, you know, ancient Greece and philosophy, you know, with Plato, with his utopian state. It's not an economic decision for these people to interfere. It's a philosophical decision. And if you look at really where the interference starts in our free markets, and always have, and as you said, that's an astounding statement to say that, oh, free markets didn't work. We never tried them. I mean, if we did, it was so far back in our history that I wasn't alive when it happened.
Right.
What a free market would entail is that the government doesn't take payoffs from lobbying groups legally and gets away with funding their basically their hierarchical status in society, and this follows down through even generations. We see the kind of nepotism that you've seen in other, you know, societies. What people have to realize is that America is a great country, but the country is not a country in general. Is not a land, and it's not a government. It's a people. Because
that's right. Exactly.
For the Jewish people, for example, they go anywhere. Through all of history, they've been chased in and out of every land in Europe, and yet the Jewish people are still Jewish, still have a culture. We right. will be American no matter what happens right. in this crisis. But in the end, our government isn't something we should identify with. We should identify with each other. And until they get their act together, quit taking these legal payoffs through lobbying and calling it business as usual and allowing it, quit allowing deficit spending, and start really taking a hard look at our tax system and where it makes sense and where it doesn't, and that's the only way we're going to get our act together.
You know, Tony, I've been reading recently, I subscribe to the Global European Anticipation Bulletin, which is something you don't want to read because it's so dismal, but they are talking about, they take a very dark view of what's going on here in the United States, and they don't see us surviving this crisis, and they have actually made a prediction that by June of 2009 we're going to see an entire currency collapse, if not the United States alone, but most countries. I understand that now Eastern Europe is in a currency collapse because they invested heavily in emerging market countries. They're down so far that they've lost their investment. The Western European or the Euro countries invested heavily in Eastern Europe. The Eastern Europe countries basically are bankrupt right now, and they're in depression. I see this house of cards. Do you have any feel for that yourself, or are you a little bit more optimistic?
Well, I mean, Europe in general has had a more socialistic attitude. I don't want to say they're socialist. Some people would just say flat out Europe socialist, but I think they've had a more socialistic attitude toward government philosophically throughout their history. And what you're seeing is a domino effect. But the domino effect, I think it's important to understand, was started by us, because what they did was invested in our debt. China have invested heavily in our debt. Everyone has invested heavily in our debt. That was our biggest export for
right.
the longest time,
right.
although they wouldn't tell us that on mainstream media. It's why God bless you for doing your show. But, you know, everybody is in this, you know, enraptured in our debt. And then when we finally say, hey, we can't pay, which is what's going on, now all their buildup, all their things they've decided they were going to spend money on in the future and so on and so forth is all coming apart. Plus, you have to take a look at something that we made a mistake, I think everybody's made a mistake in, is this UN idea, this world government idea. I mean,
right.
And I'm not talking conspiracy theory,
right,
I'm just saying flat out what they do. Look at the World Bank. They've had us going through this socialistic policy of investing in third world countries and things that make no sense. Some people are just going to have to move if they're going to want to grow crops and eat. They can't just get flour dropped to them forever. It's a harsh reality, but we need to maybe invest in moving those people as opposed to feeding them perpetually. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
There has to be real changes.
Well, you know, it's interesting that the Western countries destroyed all manufacturing in Africa, because all of the organizations, the organizations which help underprivileged countries gave free clothing to Africa. And as a result, I mean, if you had a choice of a free T-shirt or having to go out and buy a T-shirt, what would you do? You'd take the free T-shirt. And in many cases, right. The free T-shirt was nicer than the one that they produced. So even charity sometimes is the worst of all helps, assistance. And we have, the Western countries have absolutely destroyed any hope of manufacturing in Africa because they keep on giving to Africa. See, there's no consequence to anything. Absolutely no consequence. Remember the old saying, I don't know how old you are, but I'm going to be 66 in a couple of months. You can buy me a new Corvette, you know, in April, if you want. You know, just have it delivered, please. I don't want to go pick it up. But and I want the big engine, you know, the 600 horsepower engine, Tony, just for information. But the there was a saying that said, Ben Franklin said, a penny saved is a penny earned. And I heard that all the time when I was a kid. When I walked through the house, and I didn't grow poor. I grew up middle class in Harlem, New York, East New York, you know. And we weren't rich, but we never did without. My father had a business and the whole bit. So we were a little better off than the average. Not don't get me wrong, we weren't rich by any stretch of imagination. But we were sort of like a little better. We always ate and, you know, we had a car. We actually owned a car, you know. Remember my father's 49 Buick and two-door. And where was I going with? Oh, yeah. And I recall walking through the house, and God forbid, I left the light on. I mean, if I left, and we only had, like, there was no the only electricity in the house was basically lights. It was an old, you know, brownstone type house. And if I walked out of a room and the light was left on, my mother used to, I can still hear her now, God bless her soul. She's a wonderful person. She'd say, turn off the light. We're not supporting Con Edison. And Con Edison was the electric company that's, you know, that supplies electricity. And we did things like that. And to this day, I'm the same way. At the time when people were taking second and third mortgages on their houses and buying SUVs, you know, I have a car. I have one car in my house. And my wife's an audiologist. And I had two business. I had a business, too. And I helped my wife with her business. I have a Subaru. I love this little Subaru. 1996 has 245,000 miles on it. Everyone complains that my car is too old, but it looks good and it runs great. But that's the way I've always been. I could my son say, Dad, why don't you buy a new car? You have enough money to buy a car. I said, no, that's not correct. I have enough money to buy the car dealership, but I don't want to. And I tease him that way. But, you know, we didn't do that. When people were taking out third and fourth mortgages, I was working hard during that time to pay off my mortgage. And,
I agree.
You know,
with
and the whole world, I said, you know, and everyone said, I was crazy. You know, they said, why don't you buy a new car? Why don't you buy this? Why don't you buy that? Now everyone is strapped, and I'll be honest with you, I don't have any problems because I have no expenses. And the government's the same way. I'm not talking about myself. I'm just talking about the whole psyche of America. The government is the same way. And what the government will not do, which really grabs me, is the government says, the government will provide assistance too. No, they should say, we are going to take your money and the money of your children, and we're going to give it to this person here. And I want to introduce this person to you. Bring him up here to the on the podium in front of the lectern and speak to you and tell you why this person deserves the money. We'd probably strangle the SOB, you know, if we knew the true circumstances. No, it's true. When people say, well, don't you want to give to the poor? I say, don't say poor. Identify the person. Tell me why the person is in the shape that they're in. I mean, I grew up in Harlem. You know, I got my head kicked in and everything. And as a result, to this day, I have to take medication because my head was kicked in. I'm not kidding you. My head was kicked in with a baseball bat. And that's why I think funny. But, you know, we all suffer consequences, and we all take routes, and we all suffer consequences. I suffered consequences. You know, I didn't want anyone bailing me out. And I look back, and I got away with more crap than I should have. I was one of the lucky guys. And yet when we give things to people and we give them alternatives, it makes it easier for them to get out and do the right thing. They still don't do it, and then I wind up supporting them. That pisses me off. I'm sorry for the diatribe, Tony.
No, that's okay. I appreciate you spending so much time with me.
Please, I enjoy the call.
I agree with everything you're saying, and you have morality on your side, ultimately, in terms of personal responsibility, which I really believe in a lot. But I also want to mention something, too, is that poverty, to a great degree, inadvertently, is created, I think, by the government to a certain degree. And I'll give you an example. Everybody's heard of Rush Limbaugh, to plug the guy, but he is famous on his website for displaying statistics from the IRS, which are absolutely factual. And he uses it in a diatribe. He goes on about that the bottom 50%, according to mean income, which I think in 2008 was about $44,000 a year, pay only 5% of the total income taxes for the country, which
right.
is true.
Right.
And the top 50% pay 95%,
right.
which is unfair, which I understand what he's saying. But the government inadvertently trying to cure poverty is causing poverty. And I'll give you an example why. All these people, 50%, are paying 5% of the total income of the whole government. Yet we're paying out hundreds of billions of dollars to give those very people back their own money.
Right.
In a lot of circumstances. And in doing so, for generations, have created a mentality where, like you said, why would I go work for it if I can get it for free anyway?
Oh, absolutely.
If these programs wouldn't exist to a large degree, these people wouldn't be taxed to a large degree. They would be able to afford things. A person making $60,000 a year could accept a $40,000 a year job and have the same lifestyle if he had the government out of his pocket and his bedroom.
Tony, you there? Tony?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought I lost you for a second. Okay, I'm sorry. Well, we can go on and on about this. Let me just talk about another government program. The one thing that I was going to talk about, I just want to make mention of it, which falls in line with what we're talking about, is the government blames, you know, these CEOs for the auto companies for taking corporate jets to a meeting begging for money. All right, and I sort of agree. I would love to run General Motors. I've run companies. I've taken companies that were down to nothing, and I just love when things are really bad because I always say when things are really bad, I get really good. That's my saying, and that's my wife. She says only when things get so bad that it's incomprehensible. She says then you really are at your best. She says when things are going well, you get lazy. She's right. I don't want to do anything. And I said, give me General Motors. Give me 30 days. We'll fix it out, and we won't need the government. But they make a point that these guys came over here with company jets and, you know, asking for money. But yet these bums that are interrogating these poor guys are also flying around in corporate jets or get jets. Tickets paid by the federal government, taking their wives and their assistants, you know, their scribes or whatever they call them these days, and taking all over the world saying, well, it's my job to go there and see what's happening in Zimbabwe and stuff like that. And they are living like royalty, but their company, which is the federal government, is already in bankruptcy, is already dead. And yet they continue to spend money. And then they just voted themselves in an increase in January of $4,700 a year, minimally $4,700 a year. But no one says that. But we want to talk about the auto companies, but they won't relate it to themselves. Now, if they said they said, look, our government is bankrupt. We're all going to work for $1. We expect you to do the same. I'd say, all right, well, at least they have a moral point. You know, they don't do that. It just drives me nuts that it's always everybody else is the bad guy and government's going to fix it while these guys become royalty. And it just grabs the hell out of me. You know, these guys never did what I had to do to revive a business that was literally bankrupt and sleeping in the middle of the night on a dirt road somewhere with trucks. I mean, they don't know what it's like. You know, and then when I finally get out of it and make it, then the government wants all my money because I'm making a profit. And it just drives me nuts. And I'm the bad guy because I'm the one that's hiring people. And I'm the one that's creating business. I'm the one that has the innovation, the initiative, and productivity to make this economy work, me plus millions of other people. But yet I'm the bad guy. That grabs me.
Well, they take the money from you. They've taken the money from you as a business owner. And they're doing what with it, besides, of course, living high on the hog? They're presumably giving some of it back to the very people who work for you. My question is, we as people, if we've come to the assumption that business owners somehow owe us something, why aren't we cutting out the middleman so that they can quit dipping in our stash? Because that's all they're doing.
Right.
Like you said, they take trips to Zimbabwe and, you know, wherever they want to go, they have parties and it's, you know, they're living high on the hog, voting themselves raises. Like you said, how nice must that be to vote yourself a raise? I think they should make the mean income of the nation until we get out of this crisis. I really do. I think they should make $44,000 a year until this is over and see how they like it. And I'll bet you they get us out of this economic situation a lot quicker and make a lot better decisions.
Yeah, I would love to be president, dictator for a day. Make me dictator for a day. Believe me, we would be on track. Tony, we got to go off the air soon. May I invite you to call back in, possibly not this Sunday, but the Sunday following, which would be March 1st? Would you like to be to call in March 1st, 8 o'clock in the evening on Sunday? Are you available?
My schedule is very hectic. I can give you about a 48-hour notice on that, if that's okay.
Okay. All right. That'll be fine, because I'd love to speak to you again. Of course, you're welcome to call 6:30 in the morning every Thursday. I'm on. I really enjoy the program with you. But, you know, I only reserved a half hour's worth of bandwidth, so I'm going to be knocked off the air in about two or three minutes. Let me do this. Would you please send me email, if you would like, with a mailing address and your T-shirt size? I'm just going to we're going to pick up some new Liberty Talk Radio T-shirts. I think in a beautiful wine color. I'd love to mail one to you for calling in.
Sure.
All right. Just send it to me to comments@libertytalkradio.com and be my compliments,
no problem.
Okay? And I'll stay in touch with you, okay?
Okay. Thank you very much, Joe.
Thank you for calling in, Tony. Bye-bye now.
Goodbye.
Boy, that was absolutely, absolutely terrific. I enjoy talking with him. I hope he calls in again. And there we go. We just hung up. And unfortunately, that's the end of our program. And we never got to any of our emails. We never got to anything. Well, that's great. I love when people call in. Let me put our... Let's start this up again. Okay. This is the end of today's program. We'd like to thank Grant Shaker's Audiology for their financial support. And we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated, your life is in your own hands. But with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. Your ride is now controlled. And that isn't any more fun, I can tell you that. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal, the government hates competition." Our next live broadcast will be Sunday evening. Let's see, Sunday evening, the 22nd of February at 8 o'clock Central Time. We may have an author calling in. Please check our blog. And also, please go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. Find out what is happening with our economy. And for his weekly commentary, go to Contrary Investors Cafe, contraryinvestorscafe.com. And Andy's talking about what is happening to us in our economy. Very important to keep up with that. Andy Sutton is an economist, and he knows what he's talking about. He's the best in the business. Please go visit him and subscribe to his newsletter. I think it's great. That's one I never, never miss. Okay, folks, with that, we say good morning, and I'll be speaking to you on Sunday evening. Thank you.